Attention, attention. Good morning news. Direct from your friendly radio room. After being up all night again, trying to defend our people's freedoms. Seems no end to the conspiracy, how far they're willing to go. Now to cut us off from contact with the United States. We can talk because they have no jurisdiction over us, the FCC, or any other fascist agency, for we're in a land of freedom. However, the same does not apply to the many, many friends, which now number at least as friendly into a few thousand on amateur radio, and those of our own people and people's temple who hold amateur radio are no longer allowed to speak to us. But we'll work this out as we've worked out everything else. In spite of health problems, I've continued to go now for well over a week without going to bed. So there is miraculous power in this office. We don't want to take it for granted, like some who stopped me last evening when I was en route, rushing to try to do what I could to begin to work out this new conspiracy. But some people just demand that they have to speak to me. We must remember people's rally this evening, which we will be tested over the conspiracy. Those who have not seen Parallax View, the author knows we're under a conspiracy, can see it at 1 o'clock this afternoon in the theater pavilion. Accompanying it will be my tape interpretation, which will be helpful. All must understand that by now, and the conspiracy that the librarians have put on the blackboard. They have it captured very well. Teresa has captured it extremely well, and you need to see the conspiracy. I don't know if they've brought up to date all aspects of the new conspiracy involving Kennedy, even forcing the House of Representatives, U.S. Congress, to go through at least a circus hearing, assassination hearings. First witness will be that pertaining to Martin Luther King. Abernathy this morning in today's news offered nothing new. He did say that Martin Luther King knew that there was a conspiracy and that he would soon be killed, implicating the government in the conspiracy to murder him. However, interestingly enough, this week, they're going to allow finally the one that was the fall guy, James Earl Ray, to address the House of Representatives, first in secret session. We hope it will not be doctored before it gets to the public. He says that he can implicate already a member of an anti-Castro Cuban organization, the mafia, and the government. Obviously, someone helped him. Even if he had done this terrible act of murder against Dr. King, who caused the Memphis police to go in the wrong direction that day? Who gave him the money to get through several nations with different falsified passports and papers, and finally end up in a banker's home in fascist Portugal at that time before the military socialist takeover? Today's news, firemen have also joined the police in a direct confrontation with the Memphis Army, the Army of the U.S. Army, and the National Guard of Tennessee that are in the streets arresting cops as often as they can catch them, but not perhaps as many as they would, nor nearly so many as they would shoot if it were black or Indian or poor whites that were defying two court orders. It was a temporary, now a permanent court order demanding that the police go back to work or go to jail. The earthquake that struck California has left considerable damage up and down the coast between San Francisco and Santa Barbara. I believe there was a prognostication, a prophecy by your friend that that would take place before the end of this month. I know, in fact, if you'll go back and listen to the tapes, that that was the case. So who should doubt the word of one who says that socialism is right, and certainly his life is the most important thing, that constantly gives of itself over and again when there's nothing but pain for him, just because he wants to protect you and your loved ones. Against government orders, monopoly corporations have seemingly won on the East Coast, and they've drilled for gas off the East Coast in what is already waters polluted so that no one can fish from Maine clear down to the lower parts of Florida. But they say that there's some likelihood now that they've struck at least gas. Governor Brown, once noted to be the liberal of USA, has gone on record today as backing tough law and order campaigns. Tough penalties for all crimes. Those are the screaming headlines. Christine Onassis had been reported by the Western imperialist press, the lackeys of U.S. imperialism, to have deserted her Moscow newlywed, just an ordinary shipping clerk. However, it was not true. In spite of rumors that she could go to Greece that does not honor communist marriages, she has since returned to Moscow to her humble apartment to the man that she seems to care for more than all of the millions and billions. She is one of the world's, if not the world's, richest. She is the richest shipping heir, and he has taken on her name, so he, a communist, will become the inheritor of all of Onassis's shipping fortunes and all the other conglomerates. I am sure the capitalist world will do much to sabotage that. Fires around San Francisco and Sonoma County continue to burn in a drought-like condition. In Zimbabwe, the Patriotic Front has gained ground, even in spite of the fact that USA have poured in thousands of mercenaries, pretending to be mercenaries who are nothing more than regulars in the U.S. Army trained in New Mexico. The state in Palestine is about the same. Battle goes on in Lebanon between Syrian and right-wing Christian forces that are nothing more than a front for the Zionists. From Attorney General Griffin Bell comes the quote of the day. He was interviewed on television and asked about the recent incident where FBI files were uncovered in St. Louis, Missouri, showing that two Southern rich businessmen had offered $50,000 each for the assassination of Martin Luther King. Not surprisingly, even the news of USA, Voice of America reports, both of these businessmen have now died under normal circumstances. Kind of coincidental, they were both in their middle 40s. The uncovering of these files were said to be lost for over 5 years. Was presumably an embarrassment to the FBI, but not to Mr. Bell. The toughest law enforcement officer and the highest law enforcement officer in USA, the Attorney General of the United States. Do you think this was a cover-up? He was asked by newsmen. No, answered he in his bland southern drawl that I'm sure he learned well, being that he used to be in the Ku Klux Klan. I think it's the filing system. With the FBI filing system, it's entirely possible for this to happen. We've learned a lot about the FBI filing system since the Freedom of Information Act was passed. Yes, we'll bet, here at People's Jonestown Community. Like it's not so easy anymore to lose all the clues to conspiracy for upwards of 5 years. Although most of our files have never been given to us, though their new laws guarantee them that you can have your FBI file, CIA file, and several others under the new Freedom of Information Act. However, they passed new laws that anything that the Treasury Department or Customs has on you can't be obtained by the private citizens. So now the Treasury Department, Internal Revenue, and Customs are doing the dirty tricks work for the most part. His remark on the Wilmington 10 was, they're in prison for arson, aren't they? They were charged with arson, as I recall. Beyond that, he had no comment. Charged with arson. He'd forgotten the Wilmington 10, which shows the more that Andrew Young was correct, that there are thousands, tens of thousands of political prisoners in USA, including the Wilmington 10. And the Black Lawyers Conference meeting this year went further. They said they were millions. Obviously, when the highest law enforcement officer of the land does not know that the Wilmington 10 have been convicted, each one facing 400 and some years in the penitentiary, something's awfully wrong with the way he's doing his business. He didn't think that Myron Farber case of the New York Times concerned him enough to have an opinion on either. He said he really didn't know too much about it. That reporter, he said, I think, was jailed for contempt of court for refusing to turn over some thousands of pages of notes wholesale to a New Jersey court for use in a murder trial. The New York Times is still backing him up because what little left of the freedom of press is all at stake in this issue. They're paying a $100,000 initial fine for their correspondent, plus $5,000 each day for every day the material is not turned over. The Supreme Court review will seem to, according to most authorities, let him stay in jail. Some think there'll be a stay for a time. His term will last at least 6 months until the new Supreme Court goes into its hearing, which will total the bill to the Times to a minimum of over $1 million. Plus New Jersey, where the crime was charged and alleged, has one of the toughest or strongest shield laws for the nation's press, which is now destroyed by the courts. Also, the New York Times being the most influential paper in the country, Bell should have known something about it. Attorney General Bell was then asked if he thought there was a parallel between that contempt of court and his own contempt of court, for which anybody else would go to jail, for refusing to turn over FBI files, which was ordered, a federal judge ordered him to do so, on the Socialist Workers Party. No, I don't think so, he reasoned with the half inch he allows for peripheral view. His is a state court. My situation involved a federal court. Now that is really brilliance for the highest law enforcement official, lawyer in our land. Besides, I gave the information to the court. He didn't. Opinion closed. He also thought there were entirely too many cases being pressed against our very fine FBI boys. They should be granted some kind of immunity from these things they got to do to protect the people, what he should have meant, the rich ruling class. Fine, I guess, if the people, the working people, could get a little immunity, the blacks a little immunity from the cops that are killing them senselessly in the streets every day, willfully, like they did in Philadelphia on Saturday, 12 blacks alone shot down in cold blood, as well as being spied on, slandered, and every little innocent civil rights organization infiltrated, and then shot dead in the streets and planned assassinations like we saw in Parallax View. That is required viewing, by the way, for the night shift, so make sure you see it at 1 o'clock in the theater pavilion before our tonight's testing. The rest of the test, to pass, that is, so you won't have 5 days of extra class, is just to get the tape plus the conspiracy that the librarians will place on the library blackboards. That tape was given, the news, and what you're to say to guests, so you'll be sure you don't sell socialism short, is on last People's Rally tape on Saturday evening. The rest of you that hear this news, if you want to stop taking tests for the next test, pass this one on the news, and you won't have a test. And after a number of tests like that, if you keep performing that way, you'll go more than one test. Interesting, interesting indeed. Now they're going after the unions, it seems. Teamster pension fraud. But it seems that they're going to try to reach a settlement. They've got too much labor unrest in good old capitalist USA. settlement of a police suit rejected. Discrimination suit against the San Francisco police was thrown out of court. They don't want to get all the police upset at one time. They've got the Memphis police to deal with right now. Now the firemen are joining them. That's kind of a bad situation for U.S. monopoly capitalism. They might have to take their army boys out and shoot police. That'd be a little rough. They don't mind shooting students. They did that at Jackson U University when they shot down blacks in cold blood for protesting student inequalities. And also those kids over at Kent State, Ohio, that Ohio State College. But they were protesting an inhumane war that was illegal. And as Dr. Daniel Ellsberg said, we were being lied to. We never had been attacked, according to the Pentagon papers that he revealed to the press. But all's left of them is a gymnasium put on their grave site. Wouldn't want to see the Army shoot down the police. That might cause a few ripples in comfortable garrison state where everybody's a robot in U.S. imperialism. Scientists at University of Wisconsin have found soybean plants can be made to grow larger when inoculated with certain laboratory strains of nitrogen-fixing bacteria. Well, that's good. There'll be soybeans maybe growing when everybody else is dead in a nuclear war. Attorney General Younger is questioning the delay of the FBI investigation of state legislatures. The delay has been postponed until after elections. But he's not pressing any kind of charges. That's typical of Mr. Younger. California, he's the attorney general there. 18 protesters were arrested at a nuclear plant again in New Hampshire. That makes up in the hundreds now. China's leaders, as you know, their prime ministers in Romania, an ally of the Soviet Union, and then they'll go on to a non-aligned nation of Yugoslavia, and they're going over there to kind of mix a little few drinks and some chit-chat with the Shah of Iran, all in consistency with their doctrine of three worlds. They can get the Shah and the Arab League out of that second world over into the third world with where China is supposed to be leading the underdeveloped and third world nations. There's going to be little trouble for USA. Well, it's consistent with their doctrine that nuclear war is inevitable. And the Shah is certainly taking policies to increase oil prices, consistent with that book we have here in our library, The Crash of 1979, in which he finally brings about a nuclear war himself out of his lust for money and power. The president of the Congo says mercenary coup was foiled that was foisted upon him by the U.S. imperialist on their 15th anniversary of their free revolution, liberation. That's a nice time for the CIA to do their dirty work. Not surprising, is it, folks? Something you'd expect the CIA to do. I remember somebody did something pretty nice for me on my birthday last. They just try that kind of thing. Our author Cumming, who has made The Parallax View, wrote it, and we now have it in a wonderful movie, though it's not being played in USA these days. Says he knows now that Tim Stone was in a conspiracy with the CIA from before he came into our church. Maybe his healing moved him not to act on doing his dirty work for a while, but he was and is in the CIA conspiracy. And he believes the press is involved in all kinds of levels of government, just like the thing I brought out yesterday, which is required for everyone. So I do ask that the librarians bring out that CIA agent that stepped forward and spoke to the socialist world about how the mafia, the Secret Service, immigration, Dallas Police, Dallas Sheriff's Department, FBI, CIA, anti-Castro Cubans, you name it, were all involved in the murder of John F. Kennedy. And by the way, all the witnesses of that are dead too, just like all these rich witnesses that offered the rewards. See, they were part of the crime, but they knew too much, so somebody's bumped them off because it might lead to somebody bigger than those rich businessmen that I just gave you a moment ago that have been bumped off in St. Louis that offered two of them offered $50,000 each for the murder, anybody that would assassinate Martin Luther King. My. We do have Parallax View with us in every daily news coming out of that fascist military state of USA monopoly capitalist imperialism. Anyway, the American dollar keeps sinking against the Japanese yen now, as it was against all the European money yesterday. Just doesn't look too good. They're talking about federal income tax cuts by one-third, which will only help really the rich. Extreme right-wing Republican Senator Philip Crane is gaining on the polls. I'm being kind. He's really a racist and a neo-fascist. He's the first to declare as presidential candidate for 1980. Some talk in the wind that Kennedy will challenge Carter in 1980, but we don't know how much that'll do. He just recently challenged Carter for his lies about giving national health, not guaranteed socialized medicine like happens in all socialized countries, but national health insurance that the public could pay for. Kennedy still wants it and took the whole FAFL-CIO along with him, in spite of whatever mean he might have wanted. Then Speaker of the House Chip O'Neill somehow got alienated from Carter as well. Things are going kind of bad for Carter these days. The Pope is dead, and they're still worrying about who they're going to put in his place. Let's hope they get it decided before too long, for Christ's sakes. Well, that seems to be about the best of the news, the worst of the news, whatever. Never too much, I'm afraid. It is interesting that we got written up praise in the Amateur Radio Relay League magazine, and also there were several letters that appeared from even others than ourselves in the last newspaper attack we got in Ukiah, where the old drunken bitch, white lady, claimed she'd been raped by two young black men or molested. Wishful thinking, that poor old dear wouldn't be raped by a crocodile. Even a crocodile isn't that hard up. Looking a little bit on into the news, see what we can find that's worth talking about that we've taken down. Fidel sees off the U.S. swimmer who tried to swim from Cuba to Florida, but said there was just a look of dismay on his face. Storm and presence of sharks kind of wonder, cause Fidel to wonder how successful she'd be, but she's still out there trucking. So what some people will do to get in the news. Sure can't get in there because of your socialist way of life. You can get in there by being smeared or trying to swim, even if it kills you or the sharks bite you. Oh, what a sick public we are. What a sick public. We shall continue to look. Venezuelan Daily publishes commentary on Carpenter, calling him the storyteller who has made the greatest contribution to technique and to revolutionizing time. The Venezuelan Daily, right next door to us, there seems to be a left movement, published a commentary on Cuban writer Carpentier, it might be said, who was recently awarded the Cervantes Prize at the proposal of the Royal Spanish Academy of Language in Venezuela, describing him as the most important storyteller of the Spanish language. The Daily newspaper, one of the largest in Venezuela, just 10 miles to our west, published an interview with Alexis Marquis, professor of Spanish and literature in the Central University Caracas, Venezuela, the capital, and a noted figure of Venezuelan literature, who had words of praise for the works of Cuba and its Cuban writer. Carpentier is the most important socialist storyteller of the Spanish language. He has made the greatest contribution to the technique of writing and to revolutionizing the use of time, Marquis said. According to Marquis, who is considered to be one of the most important researchers on Carpentier's socialist works, the Cuban writer has the greatest influence on Latin American writers such as Gabriel García Márquez and Carlos Fuentes, both of whom are prompt to confirm this assertion. The extensive commentary stated that Marquis first wrote about Carpentier in 1932 in an article published in El Nacional, reviewing the novel Los Pasos Perdidos, The Lost Steps, and has been writing essays on Carpentier ever since. While in Mexico, the Venezuelan honored Professor Marquis said I was invited by the National Autonomous University to give a lecture for 300 persons, many of whom were postgraduate students doing their doctorate thesis on the socialist Dr. Carpentier's work from Cuba. Marquis, the eminent professor in Caracas University in Venezuela, just to our west, said the preparations were being made to celebrate Carpentier's 75th birthday, and the three countries, Cuba, where Carpentier was born, Venezuela, where he lived for 14 years under Batista's rule when he lived in exile, and Mexico, a country to which Carpentier is deeply attached, would be represented in the celebration. Professor Marquis visited Cuba at the invitation of the Casa de las Americas on the occasion of Carpentier's 70th birthday. Class nature of fascism and major concepts brought out by Radio Habana, Cuba, the origin of words used for fascism in its different forms. Fascism as a more overt, blatant form of class dictatorship, the final stages of monopoly capitalism that USA seems to be headed for. Whom fascism serves, the real top elite, ruling elite of the Trilateral Commission. Why capitalism resorts to fascism. Is there a fascist ideology in the USA? They say yes. The two sides to this ideology. The antecedents of fascist ideology. How the first fascist state came about. How Nazism arose. Came about, by the way, from two socialists who allowed their prejudice against Jews to cause them to become disillusioned. There's nothing like a disillusioned socialist, because they know that human beings are nothing without socialism. Thus they turn to the most bitter kind of nihilism, hedonism. They're the most dangerous of all. That's how easy it is to understand our traitors, because there's no meaner person than an ex-socialist. Well, it's a long, long documentary, and I may give it to you at some time in the future, but I don't think I'll take the morning hour to do so. Always fascists began to outlaw militant activity. Hitler outlawed the Communist Party, established his power as total, and began an orgy of bloody crimes. USA looks like it's beginning to outlaw the radical left again, certainly coming down heavily. The United States has begun its fascist policy, Cold War policy, with the emergence and revitalization of the Ku Klux Klan and the neo-Nazis. By the way, that attorney that was charged with smuggling the gun that came from that prominent family on the East Coast, his daddy owns a magazine and a federal judge, has just surfaced to do a secret interview with the Los Angeles Times, a reporter that may be doing a story on us later. He still told his principles of Marxist-Leninism in the sharpest terms. So sharp, indeed, all of us should listen.
Well, though there's been a 10% decrease.
Just thinking about what I should give you, be sure that you do your best to get in your interviews. You will be specially rewarded. In a way you don't expect, be very happily pleased, but stop politicizing. Don't be talking about things in terms of capitalism and socialism. Willie gave the best, Willie Malone. He just told about what a punk he was before he got into People's Temple, and what a new person he is now, and how he's so glad to be away from the threat of gangs and all of that, and the life of crime he led. Please don't politicize. For some socialist writers, we'll want it. But for others, your interviews have to be done over. We're dealing with people back there in the States, and I'm telling you, freedom's dead in USA when Governor Brown becomes a law and order man, spouting reactionary phrases. I'm talking about, yes, the young Governor Brown, just on the news, just came over the radio. We've got to be careful for our people's sake to get them to freedom. You come all things to all men that by any means you might save the more. That proverb goes back to Christian Judeo roots. You remember that lawyer that was hunted been hunted. They said he was dead and he'd been killed by the communists, so forth and so on. Talking about Bingham. That will be the end of the news for the day. Stephen Bingham, made famous. He's now charged with 6 prison killings, though he never killed anyone. Stephen M. Bingham, the radical lawyer who disappeared 3 years ago amid charges that he had helped plot an attempted prison escape by the black revolutionary author. It's been more like 6 years now. It's been 6 years ago. Who disappeared amid charges that he'd helped plot an attempted prison escape by the black revolutionary author George Jackson, is alive, is continuing his political work underground, and has no intentions of turning himself in. In an interview last month in a Canadian city, the 35-year-old Mr. Bingham appeared calm, soon be 36, healthy and in good spirits, even though he was resigned to the life of a hunted man for whom a new identity and constant security precautions had become second nature. To avoid giving any hint of his whereabouts, he would not discuss where he lived, neither the geographic region, nor whether it was in an urban or rural area, and he would not say whether he had a job, whether he lived alone, or whether he was in contact with other leftists underground, including the weather people. Nor would he tell this reporter, one Henry Weinstein, whether he would not confirm or deny charges brought against him by a Marin County, California grand jury that on August 21, 1971, he smuggled a gun to Mr. Jackson. We all know George Jackson, who was murdered by the pigs, on a visit, thereby touching off an attempted escape in which 6 men, including Mr. Jackson, were killed. But during several hours of conversation spread over 2 days, Mr. Bingham, a lawyer, a member of a prominent Connecticut political family, left no doubt that he favored a total restructuring, that's a kind word, revolution of American society, and that his thinking had evolved into clear-cut Marxism-Leninism. He identifies, he said, with a variety of individuals and groups battling capitalist values both in the United States and their puppet states around the world. People may think, he said, that I've gotten into mysticism like Rennie Davis, who once was an anti-war activist who is now a devotee of that fraudulent guru Maharaji, or I'm quietly living out my life. In fact, the opposite has happened, said lawyer Bingham. It's been a very good and strong period for me. Growing my involvement with the struggle is stronger. He added, there's a real joy from being alive, engaged at one level or another in a revolutionary struggle. And the friendships around that, but he would not elaborate. Lawyer Bingham said he chose to risk being interviewed in person because he felt the danger of his being apprehended had diminished over time. Though there's reports since this interview that he's had to flee to socialist Cuba. And because it was important to have someone see him, living underground has not weakened me, has not kept me in any way holed up or in a room, he said. And that's real difficult to communicate in a tape. He said, when you see me, you can see that I'm free and doing what I want to do with my life. The conditions for the interview were at the same time commonplace and unusual. All the conversations occurred in public places in full view of any number of people on the city streets, and yet there was a strong feeling of suspense throughout. It was never certain before each session that Mr. Bingham would reappear, and it was always possible during each session that he might be seized by the police and taken off to jail. The interview was suggested by Mr. Bingham on a phone call one morning last month to the Los Angeles Times reporter. He and I had been classmates at the University of California's Bolt Hall School of Law in Berkeley, California. I did not know until he called whether he was alive or dead, and the conversation gave no indication where he was at the time. You're Henry, he said. if there was to be an interview, there were certain instructions that had to be closely adhered to. The meeting was to be in a Canadian city. I was to go there by way of another city. The site was to be outside the main entrance of the train station. It was a sunny day. I was sitting on a bench reading a paperback book when he came up and said, "You're Henry." I said, "Yes." Rose shook his hand, and we began walking. He was wearing sunglasses, and his hair was somewhat shorter than it had been when we were co-students at Berkeley. His dress, white shirt, brown pants, and brown shoes, was a bit more somber than it had been in law school. The meeting was brief. He wanted to make sure we had not been followed. He told me to meet him at the same place 2 hours later. This led to another brief meeting and some discussion of the method of the interview, frequent moves, and no tape recordings to avoid attracting attention. Finally, 2 hours later, we met in the midst of several office buildings and began to talk. Lawyer Bingham said there was more balance in his life now that he was not frenetically thrown into things every day as he had been in U.S., living under that imperialist bondage before. This has been a catch-up period for me, trying to understand my background and what are the essential forces, both reactionary and revolutionary. We have to take account of, he said, what's happening to our beloved USA as it goes fascist more and more each day. He is one of the heirs of Tiffany. His grandfather, Hiram, was a great Republican senator from Connecticut from 1925 to 1933. I expect he's rolling over in his grave. His uncle Jonathan is a Democratic congressman from the Bronx right now. His father Alfred was a state senator in Connecticut and started Common Sense, a liberal magazine during the Depression, and his mother Sylvia was active on the magazine and, he said admiringly, is an independent, active person, thus revealing that there's probably some contact, at least, with his mother. Attorney Bingham graduated with honors in political science from Yale in 1964. During his junior year, he did voter registration work in the South and saw how horribly blacks were treated and was arrested twice in Mississippi on misdemeanor charges. Later, he arrived in the Peace Corps and served in Sierra Leone and assisted in Robert F. Kennedy's 1968 presidential campaign. By way of commentary, I guess when he saw that assassination, that turned him to get in the radical left and out of the institutions, realizing that neither the Democrat or Republican Party represented any change, but were just two sides of the same capitalist coin. That summer, he worked with migrant laborers in California's San Joaquin Valley. The following fall, he was arrested in a Berkeley sit-in, protesting the university's refusal to stop buying grapes that were being boycotted by Cesar Chavez's United Farm Workers. In the spring of 1971, Mr. Bingham became interested in the defense of the Soledad brothers. Then we know of George Jackson, Mr. Jackson, and two other black convicts who were accused of the revenge murder, all frame-ups of a Soledad prison guard in 1970. After Mr. Jackson's death, murder, we should say, the press doesn't call it that, but it was a clear case of murder by the police, conspiracy. The other two were acquitted by jury. 10 days after the San Quentin killings, Mr. Bingham was formally accused of taking Jackson the gun concealed in a tape recorder in a meeting in the prison as his lawyer visiting room. In the previous 2.5 months, Lawyer Bingham visited Mr. Jackson 6 times to discuss various aspects of the Soledad case. After Mr. Bingham left on the day of the killings, according to the authorities, George Jackson, great black libertarian, returned to the maximum security wing with a gun hidden in a wig, said the press, and all kinds of different lies. You remember that? How many lies they told about that? From one day to the next, the press couldn't tell the same story. There, they said, he was stopped by a suspicious guard, overpowered him, the guard did, freed all the inmates in the cell, Jackson overpowered the guard, freed all the inmates in the cell block, and a short time later, after 3 white guards and 2 white inmates had been killed, was himself murdered trying to escape across the prison yard. Some of the official count has been challenged by free-thinking people, they just can't quite buy the press version. Random experiments have indicated, for example, that it would be impossible to hold a gun as large as the one that George Jackson allegedly, that was supposedly carried 8.5 inches by 4.5 inches under a wig while walking more than a few steps. Also, it has been established that George Jackson, great hero of the black people, was shot from the rear instead of from the front, as was first reported, but since no trial has been held, the questions never were brought up and are thus never resolved, unresolved still, because the American people are asleep. Attorney Bingham, along with six of the convicts in the maximum security wing, has been indicted on 5 counts of murder. The indictments against the convicts, called the San Quentin Six, have been quashed on the ground that the grand jury did not include proper minority representation. There was no blacks or Indians and Chicanos available, and the San Quentin Six were made up of all races. A decision now on appeal, which, you know, lost, and finally they went to jail. But the charges against Mr. Bingham was not represented in the motion, so it still stands. He's charged with 6 killings, even though all he was supposed to do, which he couldn't have done, was given a gun that was supposed to be hid in a wig, which was impossible. Attorney Bingham repeatedly denied and declined to discuss what he had done on the day of the killings. He feared, he said, that whatever he had to say might prejudice the fate of the San Quentin Six, who are still appealing again, who have been charged with murder in a smokescreen to cover up the assassination of George Jackson, a true black revolutionary hero. I don't want my words twisted conveniently by those trying to justify murdering 6 more persons, said Attorney Bingham. Speaking of Mr. Jackson, Attorney Bingham said, I knew him well enough. He was too strong, too disciplined, too sensitive as a revolutionary to have done things in the way that was suggested, to throw his life away in a reckless suicide. Not a revolutionary suicide, but a reckless one. If you believe what the prison officials say, you have to be a fool. Attorney Bingham's parents have insisted that their son would not knowingly have smuggled a gun to Mr. Jackson. In the aftermath, Attorney Bingham's father suggested that his son had been used and that he had met with foul play. Attorney Bingham said he was disturbed by these comments, but he would not elaborate because he's very much alive, healthy, and a pure Marxist-Leninist. Attorney Bingham acknowledged that people might wonder if I were innocent, why I ran away. He recalled that Angela Davis, the black Marxist professor who fled from murder conspiracy charges in 1970, was later acquitted, and she ran away. After being caught, she was acquitted. But that was because, he said, a different mood then. Millions of people expressed their outrage, not because the jury system worked, but because there was a mood at the time. In addition, he said his life wouldn't be worth very much in prison because he is awaiting a trial for murdering a police guard. The guards and the prison officials would not make it safe for him. Unanimously assume that I was responsible for the death of several guards, even though it's erroneous, the day Jackson died, I was assassinated. So he said he would not live a day in jail. They'd have him killed. Attorney Bingham also said that reading an affidavit from Alan Mancino, a convict who swore that he had been offered an early release by Soledad prison officials if he killed or murdered Mr. Jackson, had been important in terms of my motivation. In terms of not coming back, that's what he means, he added. There's a whole different world inside prison, immune from constitutional protections. It's a concentration camp where anything can be done and is done. Torture, killings, and nobody ever knows. We all had facts of that brought out in the news every day this week. Looking to the future, Attorney Bingham said, an important aspect of the things I want to do is to deal in the whole area of raising people's working class consciousness, including many people that we normally don't talk to. No limiting barriers, said he. Here he spoke highly of memoirs of an ex-prom queen by Katie Schulman, a devastating portrayal of the experiences of a teenage girl around 1960. He favors a Marxist-Leninist party. It was not abstract. It was what we all went through. Not explicitly political, but the whole set of values that really screw us up, he said, though he came from an upper middle, no, it was really upper rich class. The left, he continued, has an ease of vocabulary, almost complacent. We talk to ourselves. Out in the world, you learn how to say the same things in a different way, in the language of the working people, rather than simply telling them they are being exploited by the ruling class. He said he was discussing political issues with the people around him in Canada and was planning to do some writing, presumably for communist publications. Attorney Bingham had praise for the East Coast dock workers who have been refusing to unload Rhodesian goods, though they've since been arrested for it. Incidents showing, he said, that Americans are realizing they have an identity with oppressed black Africa. Like a number of other American communists today, Mr. Bingham, Attorney Bingham, stressed the importance of building a political party, coalition party along Marxist-Leninist lines, because he feels Marxist-Leninism is the glue that binds together disparate elements, people of differences and backgrounds, into one movement. But he said the need for such a party should not become such a preoccupation that it diverted people from ongoing work. He referred often to the Third World and said he hoped groups of American workers would go visit Cuba, as he had done in 1969, because he said, if you could take any Americans there, you would change their heads about the way they live, because it's a beautiful socialist paradise. Speaking of the United States, he said, the country can't go on living the way we're living. Things are getting worse every day, faster, at a geometric rate. He mentioned The Limits of Growth, a book by Donna and Dennis Meadows, which he said shows that capitalism does not look with foresight into the future. It thinks only about now. That's what I've been telling you in plain terms all along. It can't plan for the future. It's too lustful, too narcissistic. At one point, he read aloud a passage from the diary of Tanya, a woman who fought alongside Che Guevara in Bolivia and whose name was adopted by Patricia Hearst when she became a revolutionary. Tanya wrote before her later terrible deed, "The most precious thing a man possesses is life. It is given him only once, and he must make use of it in such a way that the years he's lived do not weigh, and he's not shamed by a mean and miserable past, so that when he dies, he can say, I've devoted my whole life and strength to the most beautiful thing in the world, the struggle for the socialist liberation of all mankind." That's beautiful. If you know that and live in it, you'll go on to the greatest of heights. If you turn back on it, you go to the depths of hell. There's no such thing as middle ground for socialists. You either go on forward or you move backwards into the most retrogression of fascism. Mr. Bingham said it was particularly important for him to keep this in mind because there are a lot of times when I wonder if I'm using the one life I have the best way. He thus subjects every decision, he said, to a harsh hardness by reviewing it through a Marxist-Leninist communist prism. That means a microscope. And that extends to the time he gets up keeping in trim by working hard and eating as healthy a food as he can to stay alive for the revolution. But he said that no matter how strong he is and how much I may have filled my life with work and activity, there's still an aspect of living underground that's like dying in a certain emotional sense. But why should I complain when so many of the world die from hunger and starvation? I love my family, and there's the reality that for the rest of my life, I'll never see any of them again. None of my old friends, but you learn to live with that because the greatest love in the world is communism. He stressed, too, that people should not take those friendships for granted, the ones where people are struggling in a political way to make their lives more meaningful. He said relatives that don't stand for Marxist-Leninism are no meaning to you anyway. They would sell you out at the drop of the hat. His family's proven that. Also, he said he hoped his friends would have children that were socialist because the future of revolutionary struggle lies with them in USA. He was speaking of USA in particular, that socialists should bear children. Well, he's not too aware of the nuclear age, I'm afraid. But he added that considering his circumstances, the decision to have children is obviously an incredibly more complex one for me to make than other people. Did he have any regrets about a decision to leave to go underground? Without a trace of hesitation, smiling broadly, he said no. Then a few minutes later, he said goodbye and walked away. I didn't know whether I'd ever see my old college schoolmate, where he was going, or whether I would ever see him again in this lifetime. That was from the New York Times, but it was given by a Los Angeles Times writer. Thus ends news for the day and commentary. News for the morning. Remember, people's rowdy tonight, and be prepared for testing. There will definitely be testing. One last bit of news in Nicaragua. The political situation in Nicaragua is becoming increasingly critical as the people continue the struggle against threats of instant death for opposing the Somoza dictatorship that's upheld by U.S. monopoly capitalism. Each day he commits more and more murders and steps up the horrible fascist repression. But the food hunger strikes go on. Guerrillas have broken out from one major prison near Namonimbo, and have held a huge anti-Somoza rally before going off into the hills. Serious incidents are taking place all the time in Nicaragua's cities and towns that bear witness to the crimes and abuses of the dictatorship. So, bravo to the people who continue fighting and clashing. Several clashes going on this very moment. 50 were wounded this morning by the secret police upheld by USA monopoly capitalism. Our tax dollars, again, that ought to cause us no amount of pain every day and cause us to work, for the time comes when none shall work. Remember, our freedom, our people's freedom depend on it now as the fascist state's coming down heavier on their heads each day. In San Marcos, the repressive forces opened fire on a group of people, killing Fernando Tapia Orlando Flores, a 12-year-old, and another 12-year-old Samuel Calero, and wounding 15 other children. That is Nicaragua today. Joinkepe was also attacked by Somoza's fascist thugs that are paid by direct aid given by the CIA, our tax dollars, who sought to evict more than 1,000 students from the teacher training school. They arrested several young people and injured more than a dozen others by hitting them. Look up Nicaragua on the Central American map, not too far away from us above Panama. They arrested several young people and injured more than 12 dozen others by hitting them with their rifle butts. 68-year-old Carmela Cruz Peralta was killed when she was hit by a bullet while washing clothes in the patio of her home, which is next to the school. Before this, the National Guard, secret police of Somoza's dictatorship, upheld by U.S. monopoly capitalism for 44 years, had murdered 4 students and a worker, and their funeral developed into a huge demonstration in which the people shouted, "Punish the killers," and chanted socialist FSLN slogans. The bloodshed in Jinotepe, Jinotepe, began when National Guard thugs seriously wounded 12-year-old Martin Valero, whose right hand had to be amputated, cut off as a result of the wounds he suffered while raising funds for the striking students, to aid striking students. The incident aroused mass indignation and led the worker, students, and people as a whole to begin a march through the city that was attacked by Somoza's butchers, who killed 3 and wounded 20. To even conduct such a march could have gotten them the death penalty. But that's bravery, socialist bravery, people who love liberty more than their miserable little 98 cents worth of minerals that constitute their body of this life on this side, on this plane. There have been similar incidents in Rivas, León, Diriamba, Matagalpa. The people have burned buses and used homemade bombs, and students and worker strikes continue, though illegal, and can bring them the death sentence or life imprisonment. All along in every kind of city, every village, there have been every kind of protest against Somoza and the CIA, U.S. monopoly capitalists that back him. Meanwhile, the broad front of opposition forces are getting solidarity together, socialists with social democrats and communists. They've met to consider the serious political situation and have agreed to call what appears to be a general strike even though strikes are outlawed and carry the death sentence in fascist Nicaragua, NICARAGUA. Thus is the end of the news for this moment on Tuesday. Be sure you get it all, and the commentary about Attorney Bingham that was supposed to be, according to the establishment press, killed by the radicals as a fall guy. Here he is very much alive and a spokesperson for Marxist-Leninism. I love you very, very much indeed.
B-O-U-I-L-L-I-O-N. Jerusalem fell to them, and then the carnage. The killing lasted for a week. There was a terrible massacre. A French government spokesman, eyewitness of this, says that under the portico, P-O-R-T-I-C-O, of the mosque, the blood was knee-deep and reached the horses' bridles. Godfrey became king of Jerusalem, the Christian king. 70 years later, Jerusalem was retaken from the Christians by the Saladin. Yes, a heathen. That's what Christians would call him, the Sultan of Egypt. This excited the people of Europe again, and several crusades followed. This time the kings and emperors of Europe came in person, but they had little success. Remember all the propaganda movies about the Christian crusades trying to make it look so holy? This is the true story. They quarreled, these leaders among themselves, for precedence, and were jealous of each other. It is a dismal story of ghastly and cruel war, and petty intrigue and sordid crime. But sometimes the better side of human nature prevailed over this horror, and incidents took place when enemies behaved with courtesy and chivalry to each other. Among the foreign kings in Palestine was Richard of England, Coeur de Lion, the Lion-hearted, C-O-E-U-R, little capital D-E, capital L-I-O-N. He was the Lion-hearted, noted for his physical strength and courage. Saladin, S-A-L-A-D-I-N, was also a great fighter and famous for his chivalry. Even the crusaders who fought Saladin came to appreciate this chivalry of his. There is a story that once Richard was very ill and was suffering from the heat. Saladin, hearing of this, arranged to send him fresh snow and ice from the mountains. Ice could not be made artificially then by freezing water, as we do now, so natural snow and ice from the mountains had to be taken by swift messengers. One batch of crusaders went to Constantinople and took possession of it. They drove out the Greek emperor of the Eastern Christian Empire and established a Latin kingdom and the Roman Catholic Church. Terrible, bloody massacres also took place in Constantinople, and the city itself was burned by the Christian crusaders. Christians killing Christians. But this Latin kingdom did not last long. The Greeks of the Eastern Empire, weak as they were, came back and drove away the Latins. After a little over 50 years, the Eastern Empire of Constantinople continued for another 200 years till the year 1453, when the Turks finally put an end to it. The capture of Constantinople by the Crusaders brings out the desire of the Roman Church and the Pope to extend their influence there. Although the Greeks of this city had, in a moment of panic, appealed to Rome for help, for a moment they forgot their religious differences. When they called for help against the Muslim Turks, they helped the Crusaders little and disliked them greatly. The most terrible of these crusades was what is called the Children's Crusade. Large numbers, thousands of young boys, chiefly French and some from Germany, in their excitement, left their homes and decided to go to Palestine. Many of them died on the way. Many were lost. Most of them reached Marseille, M-A-R-S-E-I-L-L-E-S, France. And there, these poor children were tricked by business, big-time capitalists of that day, and their enthusiasm was taken advantage of by scoundrels. Under the pretext of taking them to the Holy Land, slave traders took them on their ships, carried them to Egypt, and sold them into the slavery of that horrible day. Both Christian leaders and Muslim leaders and other religions held slaves, even of their own color, in those days. That's why the black slave became so popular towards the end, because the slave could always be identified. That's why black people are always endangered unless they get out of areas where they're outnumbered by whites. All people of color, Indian, black, they will be the ones picked out for the cleometric theories. Even Newsweek magazine admitted that. They will be the new slaves, the new robots of U.S. society, because you can easily identify a black or an Indian or an Asian. Richard of England, on his way back from Palestine, was captured by his enemies in Eastern Europe, and a very heavy ransom had to be paid for his release. A king of France was captured in Palestine itself. The Christian king was captured in the Holy City and had to be ransomed. An emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, Frederick Barbarossa, B-A-R-B-A-R-O-S-S-A, was drowned in a river in Palestine. Meanwhile, as time went on, all the glamour went out of these holy Christian crusades. People got fed up with them. Jerusalem remained in Muslim hands, but the kings and people of Europe were no longer interested in wasting more lives and treasure for its recovery. It took them 200 years to learn it, though, and millions of people raped, killed in bloody massacres. God, how foolish religious people can be. And there's a certain religious attitude in the war of capitalism and monopoly capitalism these last days against communism. They're calling for kind of a holy crusade against communism. Since then, for nearly 700 years, Jerusalem continued to be under the Muslims. It was only recently, during the Great War in 1918, that it was taken from the Turks by the English generals, and then later turned over fraudulently. The people of Palestine had their land turned over fraudulently by the Zionist capitalists, to the Zionist capitalists, to divert the Jews from the great strength they'd given the class struggle, because they were the strongest supporters of socialism in Europe. Eyewitnesses report, as I close, about done. During the First Crusade, while the Christians laid siege to the Turkish city of Antioch, before proceeding to Jerusalem, a wealthy soldier and nobleman named Count Stephen of Blois, B-L-O-I-S, who later deserted and eventually was killed in battle, wrote the following to his wife, Adele, A-D-E-L-E, in a letter dated March 29, 1099. We found the city of Antioch very extensive, fortified with the greatest strength, and almost impossible to be taken. In addition, more than 5,000 bold Turkish Muslim soldiers had entered the city, not counting the Saracens, S-A-R-A-C-E-N-S, the publicans, the Arabs, the Turcopolitans, that's T-U-R-C-O-P-O-L-I-T-A-N-S, mispronounced, that's why I spell it for you, Syrians, and the Armenians, a group of Christians who have been massacred and genocide by the Turks and have been killed throughout the world because of being different. Oh, how the human race is so, so primitive. Only socialism can redeem humanity from its degradation. And other different races, of whom an infinite multitude had gathered together there in fighting against these enemies of God and of us, we have, by God's grace, endured many sufferings, said the letter.